Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello. And welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm June Sims in Washington. Today on the program, we will tell you about a new United Nations report that says the number of people fleeing Myanmar and Bangladesh is growing. And we will hear from an expert in the subject of eco-literacy, who says knowing about environmental problems does not mean people will take action to solve them. An increase in the number of people fleeing Myanmar and Bangladesh and turning knowledge about environmental problems into action. Those are our stories today on As It Is. The United Nations says there has been a sudden increase in people fleeing Myanmar and Bangladesh by boat. Activists fear the number will continue to rise as refugees leave unclean camps and violence in Myanmar. They say that is especially true of ethnic Rohingya. The UN High Commission for Refugees wrote the report. It says, from June 2013 to June 2014, more than 53,000 people fled by sea from the border between Bangladesh and Myanmar, formerly Burma. That is an increase of 60% from the year before. More than 20,000 people fled the area in the first 6 months of this year. Some observers say they were traveling to the border between Malaysia and Thailand, or to Indonesia or Australia. Chris Liwa is a rights activist and researcher on the ethnic Rohingya in Myanmar's western Rakhine State. She says that many attempts to flee did not happen until recently. She says more people appear ready now to risk their lives at sea.
Very worrying, and the fact that I think the situation that it's not going to stop now. Since the 10th of August, we noticed again several boats leaving within a short span of time. And that means that's probably going to continue to increase again as the season continue really pick up.
The UN report says more than 200 people have died at sea. It says more than 7,000 people are now being detained at centers across the area. Hundreds of people have sailed to Australia, but the country tries to keep them from landing. Australian naval forces have stopped refugee boats off its coast, and the country holds refugees at offshore camps. Many of the people who are fleeing are ethnic Rohingya from Myanmar. They face increasing violence and discrimination. In 2012, 280 people died in fighting between Muslim Rohingya and Buddhist communities. The fighting forced more than 140,000 people into refugee camps. Most of them were Rohingya. Young Hee Lee is the UN official for human rights in Myanmar. He says conditions in the camps are very poor. Activist Chris Lewa says the refugees often face violence and hunger. She says governments in the area have not helped them.
One of the problems, of course, is the fact that the country in the region, I mean, there is no regional response to this problem, and there is very little access to protection. I mean, as you can see, most of these people end up in Malaysia, but also others are caught in Thailand. There are still a number in detention in Thailand. At the moment, there are probably going to be more in the coming weeks and months.
The UNHCR says it is educating and giving medical help to refugees in Thailand and Malaysia. You are listening to As It Is on the Voice of America. Many people talk about protecting Earth's environment, but few take action. An American professor says individuals need a feeling of urgency before they will act. Christopher Cruz reports.
Monty Hempel is a professor of environmental sciences at Redlands University in California. He studies ecological literacy, or eco-literacy for short. Eco-literacy is the ability to think about and understand the natural processes that make life possible. Monty Hempel says eco-literacy gives people knowledge about environmental problems. But he says it does not always work to get them to change their behavior.
Eco-literacy is a phrase invented to describe the kinds of knowledge that we need to operate sustainably in the society in which we live. And that means with the environmental life support systems that provide sustenance for everybody, not just humans, but other species.
Mr. Hempel wrote part of the World Watch Institute's latest State of the World report. His chapter is called Eco-Literacy. Knowledge is not enough.
Some people think that eco-literacy is just a green form of science literacy. And what I have tried to ask is whether that's enough. In other words, what an ecologically literate person needs to know might include things like the cycles and the flows, the energy system, all of those kind of things that we would call the science of ecology.
In other words, he says, simply knowing about environmental problems does not lead people to do something about them.
That doesn't seem to lead to action to protect our environment, to protect our life support system, to the level that we need to. Just because we know a lot about the environment doesn't mean that we actually act to save it.
Professor Hempel says learning about nature would help people balance their lives. And he says it might even help reduce the number of people in the United States who are overweight, especially children.
To help children discover the wonders of nature, to help children discover what it is when they take a breath. They can probably thank the ocean for every other breath they take because of the oxygen that's produced there.
He adds that children should learn about nature in school.
One of the things that I think eco-literacy would help us do is to bring back, through experience, those wonders of encounters with wildlife, with other creatures than ourselves, and that would actually contribute to our learning.
Most scientists agree our climate is changing. But Monty Hempel says there is not such agreement among non-scientists. He says too many decisions are affected by money and politics rather than science.
How do we go back to a governance system that can actually use science to help us solve problems? That if we had a kind of system of governance that allowed us to incorporate what we know in science and to respond to it, we would all be better off.
I'm Christopher Cruz.
And I'm June Sims. That's our program for today. Please join us again tomorrow for another edition of As It Is, here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. The American computer company IBM says it has developed a microprocessor, a computer chip, that works much like the human brain. IBM calls the chip True North. It is the size of a postage stamp. The chip has 5.4 billion tiny parts that work like the human brain's neurons and synapses. Neurons and synapses are the cells and electric forces that carry messages to and from the brain. True North has 1 million neurons and 256 million synapses. The human brain has 100 billion neurons and up to 150 trillion synapses. IBM says it can program the new chip to understand difficult problems and then solve them as humans would. The company says the True North chip could be used as a brain for search and rescue robots. It can also be used for controlling new kinds of wheelchairs or for recording conversations involving several people and then making a printed record of those conversations. True North is still being tested, but IBM says it could be available for public use in 2 to 3 years. The chip is just one example of machines becoming more and more like humans. This field of study is called artificial intelligence, or AI. Some experts believe computers will someday become more intelligent than humans. Researchers are trying to develop ways for humans and computers to work together more closely. Someday, humans and computers may be joined. The combination of a human and a computer is called a cyborg. Jonathan Mugen has written a book about the relationship between humans and computers called The Curiosity Cycle. He told VOA by email that it is time to prepare for a future where computers have more control over our lives. In his words, machines are technology, and technology expands as human knowledge expands. By contrast, human intelligence developed through evolution, which is a much slower process. Mr. Mugen believes that smarter computers are good for humans. He says intelligent machines can help humans solve many of our most difficult problems. But he says, once computers become broadly smarter than humans, it's hard to predict what will happen. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. For more technology stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. You can email comments to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also watch videos on the VOA Learning English YouTube channel. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Welcome to This is America in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. Most of the world observes Labor Day on May 1st, but the United States has its workers' holiday on the first Monday in September. Today on our program, we have a few songs from the history of the American labor movement.
Labor songs are traditionally stories of struggle and pride, of timeless demands for respect, and the hope for a better life. Sometimes they represent old songs with new words. One example is, "We Shall Not Be Moved." It uses the music and many of the same words of an old religious song. Here is folk singer Pete Seeger with "We Shall Not Be Moved."
We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's standing by.
Many classic American labor songs came from workers in the coal mines of the South. Mine owners bitterly opposed unions. In some cases, there was open war between labor activists and coal mine operators.
Once in Harlan County, Kentucky, company police searched for union leaders. They went to one man's home, but could not find him there. So they waited outside for several days. The coal miner's wife, Florence Reese, remained inside with her children. She wrote this song, "Which Side Are You On?" Again, here is Pete Seeger.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Probably the most famous labor songwriter in America was Joe Hill. He was born in Sweden and came to the United States in the early 1900s. He worked as an unskilled laborer. Joe Hill joined the Industrial Workers of the World, known as the Wobblies. More than any other union, they used music in their campaigns, urging members to sing and fight.
One of Joe Hill's best-known songs is Casey Jones. It uses the music from a song about a train engineer. In the old song, Casey Jones is a hero. He bravely keeps his train running in very difficult conditions. In Joe Hill's version, Casey Jones is no hero. His train is unsafe. Yet he stays on the job after other workers have called a strike against the railroad company. Pete Seeger and the Song Swappers sing Casey Jones, the Union Scab.
The workers on the SB line for strikes are out of call, but Casey Jones, the engineer, he wouldn't strike at all. His boiler, it was leaking, and the driver's on the bum, and the engines and the bear, and they were all out of plumb.
Casey Jones
kept his junk pile running.
Casey Jones
was working double time.
Casey Jones
got a wooden medal for being good and faithful on the SB line. The worker said to Casey, won't you help us win this strike? But Casey said, let me alone, you'd better take a hike. Well, Casey's wheezy engine ran right off the wheezy track, and Casey hit the river with an awful smack.
Casey Jones
hit the river bottom.
Casey Jones
broke his bloomin' spine.
Casey Jones
turned into an angel. He got a trip to heaven on the SB line.
Another American labor song is called Bread and Roses. That term was connected with the women's labor movement. The song was based on a poem called Bread and Roses by James Oppenheim. The poem was published in the American magazine in December of 1911. The following month, there was a famous strike by textile workers in Lawrence, Massachusetts. They won higher pay and better working conditions. Oppenheim's poem gained more attention. At that time, conditions in factories were already a national issue. In 1911, a fire at a clothing factory in New York had taken the lives of 146 people. The victims were mostly immigrant women. Here is Pat Humphreys with Bread and Roses.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand millions gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing bread and roses.
Union activists know that labor songs can unite and help people feel strong. This can be true even when the music has nothing to do with unions. De Colores is a popular Spanish folk song. It talks about fields in the spring, little birds, rainbows, and the great loves of many colors. This song is popular with supporters of the United Farm Workers Union. We listen as Valdemar Velázquez leads the band Águila Negra in De Colores.
Música. primavera. De colores son los pajaritos que vienen de afuera. De colores es el arco iris que vemos lucir. Y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí. Y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí.
Dale, Jesse.
For many years, folk singer Joe Glazer was a union activist with a guitar. He was also a labor historian. Labor's Troubadour was the name of a book he wrote about his life. He believed in organized labor and preserving the musical history of the American labor movement. Joe Glazer died in 2006 at the age of 88. Here is Joe Glazer with Solidarity Forever, written by Ralph Chaplin.
When the Union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the Union makes us strong.
Now they have taken untold millions, they never toiled to earn. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel could turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the Union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the Union
in our hands is placed the power, greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of armies, magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the Union makes us strong.
Forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever.
Our program was written by Geraldine Watson and produced by Mario Ritter. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. To learn more about American life, go to voaspecialenglish.com, where you can download archives of our programs. Join us again next week for This Is America in VOA Special English.